forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field. Sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast. Today, I have a really great guest, Eric Usher. He's the president of a company called Legal AVA, and they provide virtual assistants that are highly trained, way beyond what you'd likely see as normal if you were to go out and do it yourself. And their focus is on small law firms, just like we have at Speakeasy. So I wanted to talk to him about the ins and outs of what he offers, and I think it's this will be a very useful and complimentary offer to what we do. So it's not he's a peddler. It's not like he's not a competitor, but very good guy. Again, everyone listen in on what his offer is, because I think it'll be very impactful for a lot of attorney law firms that are listening. So welcome, Eric. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. Great introduction. I appreciate your time.
All right. Well, great. Well, tell me a bit about your background. How did you get into the legal industry?
I started with kind of focusing on virtual assistants. I would say about 15 years ago is kind of when I got exposed to the space. I was reading 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss, and I was in disbelief at first, because that's when I really kind of understood the value of time. And it was an interesting concept, because, you know, we all have 24 hours in a day, but to truly succeed in this economy, we have to leverage other people's time. And I remember as a kid, my stepdad, he was kind of one of those juggernauts, business mavericks, and he was a part of Prepay Legal when it first kind of came about. And then when they changed their payment structure, he jumped into more of an office structure from an operation standpoint. And I remember as a kid passing out need a lawyer flyers throughout the city of East Point, and just kind of really understanding the logistics of marketing a legal office. And, you know, he always told me that, you know, OPT, other people's time, is really how you can truly leverage your growth. And then when I started, you know, as an adult, when I read Tim Ferriss, I think he launched that book in 2009. I don't know, a lot of us has probably read it, but to even leverage a 4-hour work week using people overseas at that time, you know, it was unheard of. There was a lot of Fortune 500 companies that were really, you know, using virtual assistants. So there wasn't a lot of platforms out there. I remember using, I think, Odesk, Fiverr wasn't even out at the time. And I think it probably came out in 2010.
And yeah, it was playing around. Resignator.
Yes, exactly. So I was one of those early adopters in that space, kind of really understanding. And at first, it was real difficult because of the language barriers, the cultural barriers. And at that time, technology wasn't as advanced as it is now. So I had to go through a lot of learning curves, and I made a lot of mistakes, because you assume that they're the expert because they have a well put together resume. And you think, oh my God, at this cost, this person is going to be amazing. Not realizing that it's an actual sales strategy for them to get hired to edify themselves as an expert. And then when you're interviewing them, you know, they're just going to tell you what you want to hear. So I made a lot of mistakes hiring the wrong people, and I got burned a lot along the way. So I kind of figured out the sweet
spot. Not to wallow in the mistakes, but what's one mistake that now you look back and like, oh man, tell it to people to help them. Good.
Yes, immediately. I mean, I would say the biggest mistake I made was kind of going based off of what I expected I wanted, meaning I was hiring for a specific role, and they told me, yes, I can do that. I can accomplish that. It would only take me this long to do it. I know exactly what I wanted. Because a lot of times when you're hiring for something, you know, a lot of times it's because either you don't have the time to do it or you don't know how to do it. So for me, I was just hiring because I needed someone that I didn't have the expertise to do. So I didn't have a clear SOP, standard operating procedure, in place as far as exactly what I wanted to get done. So I started hiring people because they had skill sets that I thought I didn't have. And now that's a mistake I will never make again. So when you're hiring virtual assistants, you only want to hire virtual assistants based off of an SOP that you already have in place, based off a system that you already know, so that you can audit, so you can inspect what you expect. A lot of times hire remotely because we're like, oh, this person has a skill set and it's at a cheaper rate, but you end up hurting yourself because you wasted time, and by the time they deliver it, you're like, what is this? This is not what I expected. So
essentially, if you go to hire a virtual assistant in another country and you don't have a plan, You're just hoping they'll take the ball and run with it. You're actually going to spend probably double, triple, maybe 10 times the time now explaining the system that you needed to create for them in order for them to function. Is that
correct?
Accurate?
Very accurate. Very accurate. So that was the biggest mistake that I made that I stopped doing. So we actually drafted an ebook on how to draft an SLP that we give away to anybody that does a consult. So that was a big thing for us.
Okay. So you went through this on your own. You had your own VAs. And what happened next?
So what happened next, I went to the second learning curve. So, I mean, hopefully I'm going to try to give a lot of my mistakes for your audience as possible because, you know, while I advocate to work with us, my biggest thing is let's leverage what's out there. So, you know, you can do it yourself, right? You can go out there and try to figure it out. So learn the difference. Another mistake I made was dealing with the IP. Right. So a lot of times when you hire a virtual assistant, they typically create a unique email address. And a lot of businesses kind of like starting off, they don't really have a unique domain address. I'm sure if they work with you, they get trained on getting their website and their email and stuff like that. But a lot of them just they don't. So they allow the VA to have their own email. And then now as you're sending emails to your VA, they're having all your data. They're having all your information. And then if, you know, some emergency happens, something, they get in a hospital, you know, they're on holiday, they have a special festival that they celebrate where they're on holiday for 30 days where, you know, they didn't tell you or they expected you to know. Now all your information that you need is locked up because, hey, I need that file that I sent you. I need that email. Oh, what was this meeting that we had? And, you know, they're out of sight, out of mind. And because you didn't control that email, you no longer have access to it. So a lot of times, you know, you're kind of angry and you're like, what's going on? And if you kind of project that, then they could just say, you know what? Never mind. Walk away. And they have total access to that email. So now every VA that I hire, I give them an assigned email that I have total admin control over that I can go in, change the passwords whenever I need to. I feel something is off. I can control the IP. I have all the data in their drive so that I'm no longer concerned about the information that I share because I control all that information.
Yeah, it's a great step. Have you seen law firms use VAs where they actually have client-facing emails and it's not for, let's say it's ABC Law. So have you seen where they have VAs where they have like, you know, joe@gmail.com and they'll email stuff to clients instead of Joe at ABC Law?
So for the most part, no. So I've seen the attorneys pretty much create a unique email for the VA. Like even though the VA had their own email address, they create an email for the VA and they pretty much operate on that correspondence or through the CRM, the practice management software. The guy that I'm helping now, he actually made that mistake where she was using her own email address. And because it was more so communicating with him and not really customer facing, she would occasionally be CC'd and then reply on behalf. And the customer was like, wait a minute, who is this? Is this a part of your law firm? Can you give me a warning in advance? And a lot of times, you know, a lot of things are happening and things are moving fast. Cases are being rushed. There's a lot of caseload. Sometimes you kind of forget that. And you kind of just say, just reply to the client as fast as possible. And, you know, they don't think to reply under their email. I mean, under the company's email, they just do what's next, the easiest access. And that's why I try to eliminate all personal emails as it relates to communicating with clients or anybody.
Well, not only that, people overseas don't know the social mores that would happen here.
Correct.
So like, you know, if I get an email that says, greeting, kindly reply or do the needful, or I'm not saying it to make fun, but I get emails like that. I know instantly. It's someone from overseas, you know, whatever they claim their name to be. And overseas people sometimes don't know. You should have a, you know, the person's name, Bob, comma, you know, then the paragraphs of text and then a signature file. I mean, there's this bad behavior in the U.S. too, but, you know, I'll get emails with no name on it, just from, you know, ABC company. And I'm like, who is this? Or I'll get emails with, you know, really no intro and person just types random stuff. And, you know, it's just not professional. And I think there's a danger there too, if the VAs are not trained on how to answer professionally. Let's say someone gets mad at them, you know, a client's angry, sends back an angry email or whatever. The VA may not know what to do. They may shut down. They may be traumatized by the experience of being yelled at. I mean, who knows? So I've experienced all these things. I don't know if you have.
No, definitely. That's a real thing. I mean, there's a big cultural barrier understanding the American culture compared to the overseas culture. Like I was just having a conversation with my Abiraji and we were talking about how you know, a lot of times in these foreign countries, you know, the way they're raised is very strict. It's very like they get talked down to a lot. So immediately they jump into defense mode when, you know, an American businessman could just be being aggressive and assertive and direct. And it could be conceived as just, oh, this person is angry with me. So, you know, let me be extra cautious. And that extra caution, you know, usually creates mistakes. So what I've done to mitigate that is I've leveraged AI. I train every single one of the VAs on AI. And I say, listen, you know, it's simple for you to, if you want to type in, there's two strategies. If you want to type your own message based off the prompt messages that we already created, then if you want to update it, go ahead and make your update, but go ahead and paste it in AI to validate the grammar, validate the spelling and all that fun stuff. And then if you don't understand how to respond to a certain email, copy and paste that into AI and then respond from that. And that has been helpful a lot because then, you know, AI typically has the right copy for the response.
Before we continue, I've been personally funding the Finding Genius podcast for 4.5 years now, which has led to 2,700 plus interviews of clinicians, researchers, scientists, CEOs, and other amazing people who are working to advance science and improve our lives and our world. Even though this podcast gets 100,000 plus downloads a month, we need your help to reach hundreds of thousands more worldwide. Please visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click on Support Us. We have 3 levels of membership from $10 to $49 a month, including perks such as the ability to see ahead in our interview calendar and ask questions of upcoming guests, transcripts of podcasts you're interested in, the ability to request specific topics or guests, and more. Visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click Support Us today. Now, back to the show.
Really? And you know that you're not going to get some really strange AI response. The person will just use and not think is bad, and then it makes it even worse.
Well, so a lot of times when you train a language model based off the prompts. So one of the biggest mistakes people have with AI is they assume that you could just dump everything into the chat. So they have this chat full of a whole bunch of skeleton different topics. Like they're talking about food, they're talking about travel, they're talking about business. So what I've been able to do is I've been able to segment each chat specific to what I need. So I may have a chat specifically for customer service, and then I feed that chat all the possible Q&A questions already in advance so that when you ask the AI the question, they already know, they have a reference point of how to answer the question already. I've learned by doing that and staying strict to that chat, you have much better response rates without any, I haven't had any kind of faulty or fake responses because it's all responses that I've prompted in advance. And that's kind of one of the most important things as well with VAs. Like when you hire a VA, you want to have prompts. Like I have like a whole Excel, like a whole sheet of prompts where they can just copy and paste. That's where the SOP come in place, where I don't want you to think. I'm doing the thinking for you. I just need you to do. The moment I'm requiring you to think, that's when I have to pay more, because there's different tiers of VAs as well. Like you have the VAs where you pay a little more and they can do the thinking for you. But then a lot of times when we were starting off, we typically want to go on the cheaper route. And when we're going on the cheaper route, then you don't want that VA to think. You want that VA to do. So it's literally copy and paste.
You know, some of the problems too, some people have a tendency to micromanage. Some people want to say, I hired this person, just go and do and leave me alone. I don't want to have to, you know, I'm paying you. I shouldn't have to tell you anything. You know, so there's like, there's two opposites of the spectrum. How do you teach clients the right way to work with the VA? You know, do they need to gauge what level of management this person needs, or do they become preset with your knowledge? Like, do you know, of the VAs do you have, can you tell them like, all right, this one can do this and that, but they can't do this. And this one can do all of this, but not that. And again, do you help guide people, and how do they run into problems?
That's a good question. So the way we do that is I do an assessment first, because like you said, there's a certain VA that's really experienced on one topic, and then you give it to another VA and it's foreign language. She has no idea. He has no idea what to do. So then what I first do is I collect what the requirements are. All right, what exactly are you needing done? What exactly are you hoping to get done? And then based off of those job requirements, I see, okay, based off of all the resumes that we have, based off all the interviews we've done, which one of these AVAs have all of these requirements that the client needs? And then if it's a requirement that's missing, The question is, how fast and how easy can we train them on this requirement based off their past requirement and their past jobs and their past roles? So a lot of times we only pair clients with VAs that already have the experience that they're looking for. And specifically within the legal space, there's a lot of VAs that's already worked for law firms in the United States, that's done intake, that's done case management. A lot of times these law firms, like the big law firms, they hire these VAs on a temporary basis. And, you know, they kind of just, they train them and then they let them go. Now, realizing that you just trained an asset for your business, that if you just continue that training, that could have been a valuable resource for the rest of your firm's life. So we look for VAs that already have the experience, that already knows the software, that's already done this specific type of casework. And then we interview them another version and say, all right, let's do an English assessment. Let's make sure they actually understand how to speak, make sure they understand exactly what that client is looking for. And then once we kind of finalize the top two, then we send that to the client to assess their resume. Then the client looks at them and say, hey, I want to interview this person. And then during that interview, a lot of times the client asks a lot of trick questions to see if they kind of can interrupt their thought process. And we kind of do that before the interview as well, so we can make sure that, you know, this is just not a wasted interview, because, you know, a lawyer's time is very important. So we try to make sure that when they interview somebody, they're happy. And a lot of times when they've done the interview, they're like, okay, I want to hire them now. So that's kind of my experience, because we find somebody that they probably not even expecting can meet these criteria at the price point.
Well, tell me, so when attorneys go and find their own VA, what training have you seen them do? And what training do you guys do? Like, how much more extensive and inclusive is the training that you do?
So we have an AVA Academy we're establishing, where we're giving our VAs training throughout. So even when they hire their VA, we're still doing continual education. Because one thing that we learned as far as retaining VAs so that we can have low churn is actually giving them certifications. So they love receiving certificates of continuing education. They love learning about skill sets that's outside of their scope, that's outside of their resume. So we're continuing to teach them multiple things, different strategies, customer service. We're even teaching them, you know, marketing analytics to actually figure out how to analyze numbers to make better decisions. We're helping them understand AI, helping them understand copywriting, helping them understand kind of the nuance of the American business, so that they can become better VAs, you know, not just for themselves, but for the client. And that makes them more valuable to the client. So we have an AVA Academy training program that we do. Now, as far as the law firms, what I've seen them do is, you know, they...
Well, one thing before we move on, what you're doing is you're investing in that VA personally, and you're giving them the opportunity to have other opportunities in their life if they move on. So I would think they're very thankful for that. They perform better because of it.
Listen, that was one of the biggest things when I realized how much they appreciated the continued education. Because at first, you're just assuming, I'm hiring you to do this job, so I need you to get good at this job. But what tends to happen is they become really good at the job. And then now they're like, okay, I've kind of figured out how to do this a lot faster than I did in the beginning. Now I have more time. So can you train me on something else? And they're really eager to do more, because they, you know, they want to sustain their lifestyle, because, you know, we pay a lot higher than the average company. So it becomes a lifestyle change for them that they want to sustain. So they always want to make sure they're fulfilling their obligation to the client. So that continuing education aspect is huge, because they become more valuable to the client, because our goal is long-term placement. Like, we're not trying to get temporary work. We're not trying to get somebody that just comes and goes. We want somebody that actually grows with the firm. And that continuing education has been the biggest factor with that.
Okay, that's great. What do you see the attorneys typically do before they work with you? How do they miss stuff?
So with me, or how they train the VA?
Right, how they train the VAs. When you hear stories from people that are frustrated and now have come to you, what are the common elements of those stories?
So a lot of times I've noticed that it's really rare that attorneys have SOPs in place, because it's so many different cases. Like, it's hard to really kind of pinpoint procedures for all these variable cases. But one person or one firm, what they typically did, which kind of got annoying pretty quickly, was they started doing kind of like the traditional onboarding with their employees. You know, they say, all right, we're going to do a Zoom. I'm going to have you sit with my lead paralegal, and you're just going to watch her. You're going to, you know, kind of listen in on the calls. You know, you're going to, you know, see how they do the paperwork, how they do the filing. And what tends to happen is they get frustrated because they're not paralegal. So unless they understand what they're seeing, what they're hearing, what they're paying attention to, it's a learning curve that's normally increased that frustration, because the attorney is like, okay, why are you not learning this fast enough? Like, what's going on? I thought you were experiencing this. And a lot of times they were experienced in customer service, a case management. They were experienced in intake calls, which intake is just a list. And then you fill out paperwork and you make sure that they actually receive the documents and stuff like that. So it's a lot easier procedure. But when the attorneys are actually training, what they're wanting to do is they're wanting to train the VA like as if they would train their paralegal. And that normally is kind of like the recipe for disaster because you're putting too much on their plate before they can digest what you actually want them to do. And from the one attorney I spoke to, a lot of times it was because they wanted to make sure that the VA didn't mess up when talking to the client. Right. And kind of the one thing I told her was you need to just have a list of just these are the rules. You know, do not say this. You do not have the right to give a client any advice on their case. Only repeat what you're actually trained to repeat. And the thing is, they'll follow instructions if you give it to them. If you assume that they understand or that they know that they're going to follow what you already know is second nature to you, then you're going to be really disappointed. That's kind of the biggest setback is a lot of attorneys just assume that because I'm hiring a full-time staff, they should give me the same energy that a paralegal would give me in the state. And that's just not the case with the VA.
Are there any specific failure points? You know, again, when attorneys think that they will do everything your VA does, any specific failures or most common failures? The VA is going to fall down. Where do they tend to fall down? Like one we've identified is culture and interacting with client-facing issues. You know, they may have no idea how to do that. But what else would be, you know, is it knowledge of the law?
I would say, what
level do you train them versus a paralegal will be trained?
Correct. Yeah. So we don't train them on case law. Actually, this litigation paralegal that I was able to place, he worked with several law firms because he had the experience, but he was actually applying to be an intake specialist. But when I reviewed his resume, I was like, you have a lot of experience. I was like, you've done research, you draft. He said, yeah, I've drafted. They taught you how to draft. So I was able to get him placed with an attorney that was looking for a litigation VA. So that worked out great. So, but for the most part, a lot of the VAs, they don't have that experience. Like their experience is traditionally focused on client intake and then case management. Like what they're really good at is becoming an expert at your software. That's kind of one of the best things that I've saw. The moment you try to get them to start looking at documents and case files, that's when you're losing them because there's a lot of different cases based off the state. There's a lot of nuances to each case. So I say if you want to eventually get them there, then you can work them up to that, but start at the basic. It's kind of like you want to start somebody in the mailroom and then work their way up. And the thing is, if you invest that time and energy, then you will. They will be successful at it. And that's one thing that we do also. We actually take the time based off the client's requirement to train the VA. So if a client says, hey, I want this person to be trained on this and they're not trained on this, but I want this specific VA because their diction is good. They seem to have good work ethic. I like their resume. They did a good interview, but I don't have the time to train them. We actually will take that on and we'll train them based off of that requirement so that attorney doesn't have to do that. And typically it takes about, I would say, 30 days to really get them good, 90 days to really get them like, wow, like that's when you really start becoming impressed with your investment.
So what's a practice area, you know, that comes to mind where you did training for the VA and what did that look like? Maybe a brief sketch.
Practice area, I would say the best one was when we did a software switch. We switched from my case to CasePeer. And of course, whenever firms do anything that's changing anything, it's always kind of a lot of friction. It took a lot for the attorneys to even get to that point. So the VA was already an expert in my case. So it was now time for her to become an expert at CasePeer. So then, you know, they have all these different training modules. And then, you know, your staff just doesn't have the time to go through all the videos. You give them the videos, you give them the emails, but they don't do it. They skim through it because they have a whole bunch of caseload. They're like, I don't have time for this. I got to focus on my cases. So we actually make the VA, the Ava, she learns everything. She becomes the expert in CasePeer. She started talking to the customer service reps. She starts learning everything about us. So then now she becomes the bridge point between the staff and the software. So then now whenever the staff have any questions or, hey, I need you to do this, they just send it over to the Ava. And then now the Ava's utilizing the software better than ever before because software's work, you just have to utilize them. A lot of firms are not utilizing the software. So that was probably the best use case where we were able to integrate CasePeer within like 60 days before the firm was able to like completely eliminate my case and really fully integrate CasePeer. And then it became a good thing because we were able to be a lot more productive and actually get an update on our cases. And then Ava would do the follow-ups. That was a really good experience that I saw. The lawyers were really apprehensive at first, but I said, just trust me on this process. It's going to work. And I'm happy they did because they're a lot more productive now.
Yeah, when, you know, we've changed software on various things and there's a transition period and it's a lot of work. And then you got to understand the new software too. So for an attorney, I'm sure they're like, I don't want to learn this stuff. And they're afraid, you know, what if we have to call up this company now and they don't have good customer service, or we don't know how to use it, or they're going to charge us extra just to learn it. And so to have an in-house expert on the software would really help a lot. I mean, I would guess most attorneys, like, you know, legend has it, we only use 10% of our brain, supposedly. Maybe we're only using like 10% of the software capabilities of everything we have without training.
Correct. I mean, it's really a game changer when you really start utilizing that software. And having it able to become the CRM expert is almost a hack within itself.
Excellent. Okay. What about how an attorney interacts with their AVA? You know, we spoke about this before. Some may have the tendency to micromanage. Some may be, you know, you just do everything yourself. I don't want to even look at it. What kind of training do you have for the attorney? Not that there's anything wrong with them, but to help them become, to utilize their AVA a lot more successfully than they otherwise would.
So I recently implemented this because I noticed a problem, because a lot of times, because they're overseas, you have WhatsApp, you have Skype, you have email. So what we recently did a partnership with NetLink, where we are now giving each attorney their own VoIP line that's a part of the subscription. And that VoIP line pretty much has their own branded name. And a lot of times they're using that number for incoming calls. So implementing that has made it a lot easier for the attorneys to communicate with the AVA, because they can just call directly, or the AVA gives them a call following up on meetings that's coming up. Or if they have a meeting that's queued, the AVA gives them a call and then they ping into the client. So utilizing that VoIP line has been probably the fastest and easiest way for the attorneys to communicate with the AVA, because you know when they're online, so you can contact them at any moment. So you're really just calling a local number that's your firm's number, and then your AVA is answering. Prior to that, we were just doing WhatsApp and email. So every morning, the AVA would send an email, pretty much an update of what, you know, what's on the calendar for the day, what clients need to be contacted, what clients were forgotten about, you know, like the days prior that are like an urgent matter. What are some deadlines that need to be hit? What are things that need to be submitted? That happens every morning. And then they normally do an end of the day report of like, hey, this is what I completed at the end of the day. This is what we're expecting tomorrow. These are some things that you need to be prepared for tomorrow. So they maintain a really good communication cycle. And then now with the VoIP integration, it's a lot easier to just give them a call and then they pick up right away.
That's great. You know, what I'm hearing is that you're really looking, course correcting, improving rapidly and in a lot of areas, which is great. So I know that attorneys that will work with you will experience that as well. Things will continue to get better and better, and their concerns are going to be listened to because you're always innovating, which is great. It's not some just, oh, give us your feedback and we ignore you type thing. So I'm glad to hear all these nuances, things you're figuring out.
Oh man, it's important. I appreciate that. We're trying to establish long-term relationships because it benefits us because we have a long-term client, and it benefits them because now they have a long-term staff member that's just getting better and better with every new iteration. So no, I appreciate that.
Yeah, we talked about this a while ago, and I saw in the literature you had a no-ghost guarantee. I'm guessing that, well, I've heard here, unfortunately in the U.S., what's called quiet quitting and ghosting. Sometimes, and I've had this happen too in the past, an employee just stops, they disappear. Like there's no word. It's weird. And you think they become like a missing person. I don't know if you've ever encountered that, but what is this no-ghost guarantee, and how does that work with your VAs?
So the no-ghost guarantee was exactly for that. I mean, when you're working with someone remote, you know, there's so many different reasons where they just, you know, become unresponsive, unavailable. I mean, and it could be for really justified reasons. Like, you know, they could be admitted to the hospital and you just don't know. And then they get back to you within, you know, a week or 48 hours, but you know, your business still has to continue. Your business still has to run. So the no ghost guarantee, what that does is we pretty much onboard a kind of a part-time VA that we cross train with their full-time VA so that they can actually know and understand everything that's going on with the firm. So in the event that the VA is not available, in the event that the VA has to go on holiday or what have you, and that lawyer really needs somebody there, that VA is already hip to what's going on, to understand the software, can already jump in and help. And a lot of times, this is also kind of a segue, because what I've noticed is a lot of attorneys end up hiring multiple VAs as they get comfortable with it. So then that no-ghost AVA ends up becoming the second hire, so that's already trained, so that learning curve is almost cut immediately because they're just right there already ready. And then we just can employ another part-time VA that can learn everything that they need to know just in case something bad happens. But yeah, that no-ghost guarantee was a game changer. So
yeah, that's great. Thank you. Yeah, I worked with people, like I'll give you some examples of the things I've run into. I had a couple of staff members in Kenya, and I didn't realize that Unfortunately, that country experiences like 70 blackouts a year. The rainy season, they'll lose their power 2-3 times a week, which is crazy, you know? And sometimes it makes it unworkable to work with people like that. I've had people also in India and Pakistan, et cetera. If they're Muslim, it's totally fine, but they have 2 Ramadans a year.
Yep.
You know, they have, 2 Eids a year. So they got to take off, you know, 3 to 4 days for that twice a year. And they may have the founding of their country day, et cetera. Their holidays may be very different and usually are very different from ours. So how do you reconcile that when, you know, a law firm will be open and maybe just closed Thanksgiving and Christmas and, you know, the American holidays, but the overseas holidays are different?
Communication. I have VAs that work both in Pakistan, Bangladesh. So I deal with that as well. And what I just communicate. And even sometimes, depending on their performance, I even try to give them a bonus during those holidays because, you know, it's really appreciated. It goes a long way where they're like, oh my God, I appreciate you helping, you know, me and my family celebrate during this time. But it's really just communication in advance. Hey, so this is your schedule. So during the year, what are some things I need to be aware about? You know, you probably have an anniversary with your wife, or you have something going on with your family, or you have an annual ritual that you do that you just can't get out of. I need to know what those things are in advance so that I can plan around those. A lot of times when you know in advance, you can kind of plan around it where it's like, all right, so you're going to be gone for these 2 days. I need you to get all this stuff done so I'm not even worried about it. And then if you can, sometimes a lot of times they love what they're doing and they're really happy to work there. They'll even kind of tap in and for like an hour, you could see them log in and reply to some emails even during the holiday periods. But then I've had VAs that's just completely with ghosts. Like when I first started, I had a guy and I was Asia, and I had no idea that it was the Moon Festival. And the last message they sent me was, hey, it's Moon Festival. See you when it's over. I was like, whoa. And I was expecting some deliverables. And I was like, what is this? Like, I was so pissed. And that was the last time I hired. Like, once I learned, I was like, I'm no longer hiring anybody that has a Moon Festival, because he was gone for 60 days.
I've worked with, once or twice, I worked with someone in China on the Chinese New Year. Well, they had, and they still do. But they were gone for, 45 days.
Yeah,
I have to go.
I couldn't do it. And they don't budge. It's like, I told you about this. I prepared you. I'm like, no, you did not. So that was a lot of my learning curve. So that's why I'm very particular on who I hire, because that can make or break your business right there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's good to know all these landmines so that you clear them away for attorneys.
Exactly.
Okay. So what does this process look like? Well, let me back up. What kind of a law firm needs legal aid, but which ones don't? Either they're not ready, or because of their structure, whatever, it's just not suitable for them. Like, who is your ideal client and why?
I would say the most immediate needs are definitely solo practitioners, solo attorneys immediately. And then I would say firms with around 2, the sweet spot is about 2 paralegals. Anyone that's over like 5 paralegals, a lot of times they have a good, you know, company culture. They have a good flow in place. You know, they have it's symbiotic, and you don't want to interrupt that unless those 5 paralegals are working on really intense cases. And you're like, you know what? I really wish this paralegal can just stop dealing with intake and really focus on this caseload. In that case, you can leverage and enable. But for the most part, the solo practitioners and the small firms that just want their paralegals to work on the case while the AVA can focus on, you know, the software, the client follow-up, the client rejections, the intake, the just, you know, filtering of the calls, filtering of all the solicitations that come in. Those are probably the most valuable resources that the firms can actually benefit from the most. Like the large firms, a lot of times, like, I mean, I can kind of see them wanting to employ an AVA because they have high churn because of just the pressure and the caseload that just comes from that, because they have a lot of marketing dollars that's being spent. And, you know, for those firms, you know, a lot of times I've had one, it's a lot of red tape because it's always the managing partner that has to make the decision. Then it's all a lot of other people below them that's like, I really want this AVA, but the firm has to approve it. So the easiest is probably the solo firms and the small firms that can really use that extra help in hand with their software, with their intake and their case management, just to really improve that client relation. Because clients, man, like, it's the you hear the stories, you read it in the reviews. Clients, they get neglected, you know. they get.
I'll give you a very visceral example. So we run an answering service in addition to the marketing we do, and the real successful clients, what happens is their phone, half of the calls turn into existing clients. So it clutters up their phone line, And they're getting so many calls from current clients that it's just choking everything. They can't handle their normal flow and they can't take on new clients as effectively because there's so many that, and you can tell, why would so many of these people call in? Because the inner dynamics of the firm aren't mature enough with their processes to work with these people. So they're calling in saying, what's going on with my case? There's just one example I see.
Oh, no, all they want is an update. What I've learned, all the clients, hey, I'm sorry, but we currently don't have an update on your case. We've submitted it over, you know, we're waiting to get the report back, waiting to get the medical records back. The client just wants to know you're working on the case. And a lot of times we just communicate that, they feel a lot better. But what the client doesn't know is the attorney is actually working on the case and the attorney has bigger fish to fry. So attorney doesn't want to take the time to really just break down the small nuances and repeat the same thing over and over again. That takes away. The attorney's time is so valuable that you don't really just want to waste it just repeating the same thing over and over. But you know, you get an AVA in place where, hey, just, you have a weekly or biweekly cadence. And then you ask the client, hey, I know I've been following up with you every week. Do you want me to continue following up weekly or would you prefer biweekly? And a lot of times they say, you know what, you've been consistent. Just let me know whenever attorney's available. But biweekly follow-ups, okay. And you'll be surprised how better your reviews will be. And then the residual aspect of them talking about their case with their friends. Because the one thing that attorneys don't know, or they probably do know, they just don't not aware of, is every case that they have, their client is talking to everybody around them because, you know, we're part of the gossip culture where it's like, oh, I got an attorney, I have a case. So what's going on? Oh, I haven't heard from my attorney in forever. And those are negative.
Yeah, that's what we hear. That's what we hear all the time is my attorney won't call me back all the time, every day. Well, especially the answering service. But that's not good.
That's, I mean, if you're hurting the business.
Yeah. Think about it. You pay someone, you're frightened. They're there to represent you in a legal matter, which is scary. You know, you're probably thinking about day and night in the shower all the time. And then on answering you back, you start to freak out. And then people do crazy stuff. Bad reviews, you know, I'm firing you, all kinds of stuff like that.
So, yeah, I had a buddy that did that.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God, it was bad. He called me. He was because I referred him to an attorney. And he went with the 25% lawyer instead. I was like, don't do that, because based off your case you may have to take it to trial, and if you do the 25% lawyer, that means you're gonna have to get another lawyer to actually, it's gonna be a cluster. You don't want to do that. But he was like, oh, I want more money, so I'm gonna do this route. And he was getting the runaround, and he was like, I'm just trying to hear back from my lawyers. But then he called me venting, and then he left a long negative review. Like, it was almost a sonnet of just how bad the attorney was, all because he didn't respond to him. And then the attorney saw that, responded immediately, gave him an update on the case, and he was just literally 24 hours delayed of just updating. He was like, oh, I'm sorry, I kind of left a bad review on your, you know. But someone saw that. Once something is online, whether you delete it or not, it's there. It's a digital footprint. So it's...
You know what you can do? Why can't you say to your clients, SOP, we will update you every Friday on the case, even if nothing's going on. You'll get it in email at end of day at 5 p.m. And again, if it says nothing has changed, we put no update. If something has happened, we put it there. Every week, you're going to get that.
They will love that.
And that would help.
They will love that. Because then now they can brag, oh, my attorney communicates with me all the time. Oh, really? I need to use your attorney moving forward because my attorney never talks to me. So yeah, that'd be a big game changer for me.
Okay. Well, no, that's really great. What happens if the VA has to interact with not just the attorney that hires them, but, you know, paralegals or other staff? Do you have any, you know, like where other people in the firm will be like, they'll try to use the VA and give them stuff to do, and the VA gets conflicted as to who their boss is? Like, how do you set those rules?
Well, no, that's so we welcome that. So especially if it's a paralegal, like the goal of an AVA is to make the paralegal's job easier. Like the paralegals that have utilized an AVA, like, oh my gosh, the AVAs are the best because they're essentially a second tool for them. Now, where it gets conflicted is when you have, you know, multiple managing partners that are trying to leverage the VA for different cases, where it's like the VA is assigned to this partner and this paralegal, so they're working on these cases. And then the managing partner say, well, hey, can I use your VA for this case study that I'm doing? Or I need them to email some people. And a lot of times, if the AVA has the time, she's willing to do it or he's willing to do it, it's okay. But if they're not, then it's kind of like, hey, you probably should just get your own AVA so that you can have all these things taken care of yourself. But I mean, as within that 40-hour work week, if they have the time, they're more than happy to assist. Like, there's never a discrepancy as far as who's the boss, because the firm is the goal. The firm's success is the goal. So, you know, they typically assist everybody and they're happy to do so.
Okay, that's great to hear. What other aspects of the onboarding have you smoothed out, or of the ongoing operations have you smoothed out? What other tools or dashboards or reporting have you developed for firms?
So we already kind of have already like the EODs, the end-of-day reports. We have KPI metrics, key performance indicator metrics. It really depends on what they're looking for. So a lot of times whenever an AVA gets hired, one of the first things that, whether the attorney asks for it or not, the first thing that I say, all right, so this is your first task while you're going to this training. Your first task is to draft an SOP for this firm so that the AVA's job is to pretty much collect all the data they're receiving and draft an SOP specifically for this firm so that the firm knows exactly what to expect. And then from that SOP, you can get KPIs, which is the key performance indicators, because the AVA wants to know, how do you know if I'm successful at my job? How do you know I'm doing what I'm doing well? Because they love that. And then because we have a bonus structure where we incentivize the AVAs to do well with the firm. So in order for them to, you know, be incentivized or receive their bonuses, we have to know if they're hitting their KPIs. So we have these tables that's already preset, you know, and we have percentages allocated to it. And as long as they're over 80%, then, you know, that's a passing grade. But traditionally, 100 is what we aim for. But 80% that we have seen historically in the beginning is kind of where they start to feel like they're empowered and they know exactly what they're doing. But yeah.
One thing. So when I hear standard operating procedure, when I hear SOPs and KPIs and all that, I kind of feel like, oh, I got to do this work. Who in their mind would love to create an SOP? It sounds like it's deadly boring.
Yes.
And again, I don't know how to do it if I'm an average attorney. So how do you help them overcome that? Because I'm sure they're like, oh, I don't want to deal with this. You
know? Well, no, the attorney doesn't do it. So we have an ebook that we created, and the AVA creates the SOP on behalf of the attorney. The attorney just approves it. And then the AVA creates the KPI document on behalf.
Like do an impromptu interview with the attorney with a few set questions so they can craft the SOP? Or do you have a library of standard ones per practice area that the attorneys, you know, that they'll need so that AVAs are trained on it? Like, what does this part of the business look like?
So what I've seen, because a lot of times I have my own kind of operating procedures for different things, for like custom calls and intake calls and case files. What I've seen is a lot of attorneys have their own systems in place that works for them. And I definitely don't want to infringe on that. So I say, whatever you already have in place, whatever you were going to train this AVA on, let's go ahead and just focus on that first. And then the AVA is going to take the notes and then pretty much take what you have. Because a lot of attorneys may already have a system in place, which is even better, because then now they can just plug and play and then create some KPI specifically to that. But we have an onboarding call where the AVA and the attorney get on the call and we kind of go over all the requirements. What exactly are you expecting? What is considered a successful day for you? You know, what is going above and beyond? What are some things you do not want me to do? Just really like the attorney's able to just verbalize everything that they want. It's recorded so that the AVA can track it. And then the AVA documents it. And then once it's done, everything is for approval. That's one thing they should know, is everything is for approval. So before they submit anything to anybody, even an email, even a correspondence, it's, hey, it's for approval. And then once that attorney is comfortable with that, then that's when they start, you know, we loosen the string a little bit so that AVA can have a lot more flexibility. But a lot of times the firms come kind of with their own procedure in place that they just want the AVA to follow. And then the AVA just takes that and create an SOP and KPI.
Great. All right. Well, I think we've uncovered a lot of really cool things here. I know that attorneys that are interested are going to have more questions. So what's the best way for an attorney to take action after listening to this? Do you have a calendar link that we could post so they can schedule a time with you to talk? Or, you know, again, how can they go from here to take the next step?
LegalAVA.com. There's a calendar link there. I'll also give you the calendar link. And essentially, they can just schedule that time with me and have all the questions prepared. Even if they say, you know, hey, I don't want to, I've already hired a VA or I'm already working with another company, but I kind of need some advice. I actually would like to talk to more attorneys regarding this, because I know that this is something that's going to help. And the more I communicate with attorneys to help them out, they may have some attorneys that they can refer to me. So I'm willing to kind of give that out and just be of service, because that's the only way to win, is to just help as many people you know get there. So LegalAVA.com or Eric@JustAskAVA.com. But I'll send you the link, but the scheduling link gives all my availability, and you book it and we'll be on that call. And we'll try to provide as much value as we possibly can. And then if you're interested, I have the SOP ebook that I can send over as well. So just ask for that and it's yours.
Yeah, and I just want to let attorneys know, I don't get any compensation for recommending Eric. I still recommend him. honestly, I've I worked with him now for, you know, maybe like a month and a half. I've only seen good things. He listens, he changes, he improves. This service I know is just going to get better and better over time, and I vouch for it fully. So anyone that has any questions, you know, if you've heard my emails and audios and all that before and you know me and trust me, I encourage you to give this a serious look, because I think Eric's not just a company where you'll sign up and then, you know, have trouble getting through to them. I really believe he's going to give you a good experience and he'll benefit your firm. So I just want everyone to know that.
Oh, man, I appreciate that. That's beautiful. Thank you so much.
All right, Eric. Well, thank you so much for coming. Again, for attorneys listening, legalava.com, LEGALAVA.com is where you can go. And we'll also have a link for you and show notes and everything. So again, Eric, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Richard, man. You have a good day.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius Podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at FindingGeniusPodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.